Coming to you live from the first ever time from my basement, it's the Hand Plus Podcast, brought to you by Movie Change Up, where each week, I, Joseph Fricke, and my co-host Tristan Mayer break down this week in movies, but we're doing something a little bit different. It's our last show of the year, and we're not going to be talking about, what did we watch this week? We're going to be talking about what did we watch this year, and specifically by giving out handies. Now, handies, that's what we call our awards. So we have different categories from best movie performance, best streaming TV performance, best streaming scene of the year. These are all movies and shows that were on streaming. So maybe if a streaming platform released it in a theater for a little bit, like a Glass Onion, it may be a movie that you saw in theater. Otherwise, these are all going to be movies and shows that were straight to streaming. They weren't things released later. So something like Bullet Train may have a great scene, and that's currently on streaming, but that was a movie that was like a theatrically released movie that has now since been put on Netflix this year. I don't really count that as a 2022 streaming movie. And Tristan, hopefully you feel the same way, so our lists align a little bit more. And so how this is going to break down is we're going to do this, if you've been watching our show, how we do the MVP. We came up with our categories. We both knew the categories. Tristan has a nominee for each. I have a nominee for each. I have no idea what Tristan nominated. He has no idea what I've nominated. And we're just going to hash it out. I have no idea how long this show could take. We could spend 10 minutes hashing out one topic, or we could have a lot of the same picks or very similar picks that make it easy to bounce back and forth. Or maybe I say something where he's like, didn't think of that. I like your pick better than mine, and vice versa. Tristan, tell me, how long do you spend coming up with your picks? How do you feel about your picks? Do you feel like you're going to win me over with some? Do you feel like I may win you over with some of mine?
Look, Joe, I don't know about you, but I'm going to win every single one of these categories, okay? It's going to be my list all the way down this episode, all right? So prepare for a battle. Prepare for an entire fight for the whole. It could be hours, Joe. You go 3-4 hours. It's going to be longer than Avatar 2. We'll be here arguing about who wins the year. But yeah, it'll be a fun conversation. But yeah, I'm ready to fight. I got some takes on here that I think you might have not even seen. So it'll be interesting to see how that fight goes, you arguing against something that you haven't even watched. So it'll be a fun conversation.
Here's the thing. If I have a top category I don't feel strongly about, and you're coming in here with a White Lotus or a Ted Lasso or something I haven't seen, and you have some passion behind it, I'm probably going to relent. I'm not out here trying to fight over stuff I haven't really seen that much. But if I haven't seen it, but I still feel strong about my pick, I'm going to run through you. But speaking of Avatar 2, watched it Christmas Eve with my future brother-in-law, and it's really good. It's a lot better than the first one, in my opinion.
Great.
I went into Avatar 2 being like, that first Avatar was fine. This is getting a lot of hype. We'll see how it goes. But I really liked it, and I'm actually excited for future installments of the Avatar franchise, and it's quietly making a lot of money. It doesn't seem like people are talking about it, but people are still going to see it. It's already eclipsed a lot of the big box office movies of this year. It's like, I think, just past its second weekend, and it's already number four or five worldwide. So hopefully it has some legs, and we'll see how it ends up. What if James Cameron breaks the record? What if this is a movie that just, once it gets to like 40-45 million a weekend, it just stays that way until the next big release comes out, and we look.
Yeah, and you think about it, there's not much out until February with Ant-Man, so you could clear the house for a couple of months there. You know, getting a couple dozen millions. You know.
Yeah, and next thing you know, this is the highest-grossing movie of all time, and everyone's like, James Cameron did it again.
Could you imagine? I'm rooting for it.
Like, technically, it's an IP, right? Technically, it's an IP, but it's the second movie in this IP, written and directed by the guy who created the IP. So it's hard. I don't look at it the same way as I look at other IP movies. So
yeah, this is not a Star Wars movie or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah. All right, you ready to kick this off?
I'm ready. Let's talk about some movies that were not in theaters, some streaming stuff.
All right, and let's kick this off with best movie performance, and I will start this off. This was probably the last one I picked. I was bouncing back and forth between a few. But ultimately, and maybe this is recency bias because I just saw this movie not that long ago, I'm going to go with Janelle Monáe from Glass Onion. I don't want to say too much. This movie recently just came out on Netflix, and some people may still haven't checked it out yet. I don't want to say too much. And you're probably going to get through the first half of the movie and be like, why'd he pick Janelle Monáe? But I think as you watch the movie, you're going to realize, he definitely had valid reasons for picking her. And I really liked her in this movie, and it's hard to speak too much when the movie's this recent. I don't want to spoil it, but like I said, Janelle Monáe, that's my nomination. Tristan, who did you pick?
Yeah, Janelle Monáe was actually on my consideration as well. I think she has a really dynamic and kind of varied performance here in the movie. She kind of, I think, has the widest arc, you know, similar to how in the first movie, Ana de Armas really has kind of the arc of the story, and Daniel Craig is just there to kind of like usher the plot around to be entertaining, and that's a similar dynamic here where she's the center of that arc. So I'm definitely not going to fight you too hard on that pick. But for me, I went to the other side of the glass onion, and I picked Edward Norton. A comeback performance for Edward Norton. He hasn't been in a movie in a really, really long time. So I think this was really fun to see him come back after like almost a decade of not being in a movie, especially in a main role like this. And I think he plays the character you would assume would probably play a certain role. He doesn't play that role. You know, he kind of subverts a lot of what you think from the character. And then I don't want to get into a lot of the spoilers for Glass Onion or anything like that, because it just came out like within days, you know, but I thought it was really great use of Edward Norton, a great comeback performance for him. He has some of the best comedic moments of the movie. I think Edward Norton's like physicality and like his performance and the way he sells kind of the smarmy, douchey Elon Musk living on a desert island kind of guy. So yeah, I loved it. I think he was a great pick. So I don't know, where are we going on the two performances here, Joe? How are you feeling about the fight?
All right, so far? I like that we're both going with the movie we've seen, both the same movie, so this makes it a lot interesting because it's two characters going toe-to-toe. My thing is, I feel like Edward Norton, that's a lot of sameness of what I think. It feels similar to like his character from Birdman. It's just, oh, he's rich now. And my defense for Janelle Monáe is Edward Norton only had to be in this movie once. Janelle Monáe had to be in this movie twice, and I feel like both times she did just as well as Edward Norton.
I think that's a good point. I'm going towards you because of the duality of performance. I don't want to get more into that, but there's a fun duality, couple of cool switches, you know, and the way that the timeline plays around, similar to Get Out. I mean, First Knives Out plays around the timeline. I think she helps that a lot in her performance. I think if she wasn't given the performance she was giving, I think some of the jumping of the timeline would be very confusing and hard to follow, but she's able to sell you. So when you see her, you immediately know, like, where are we on the timeline of the story right now? You know, what's going on? Who are we seeing? So I like her a lot. So even though I said I was going to fight you on every single one here, I might have to go ahead and cave to the first one here.
All right. So the first handy of all time goes to Janelle Monáe in Glass Onion on Netflix. So Netflix taking home the first ever handy. So congrats, Netflix.
Congrats, Netflix.
And with that, we move on to our second award, and that goes to the best TV performance. And I kicked off the last one. I'll let Tristan kick this one off.
This was probably my hardest category, honestly, of the entire night, because I thought that there was a runaway winner, and then I started thinking about some of the other people, some of the other performances I saw this year, especially early on in the year, and it was really hard to narrow this down. I thought about people like Matt Smith from House of the Dragon. He did great this year. I thought about Patty Constantine. I thought he was incredible in House of the Dragon. I really thought about him. But for me, I went with a show that I don't believe Joe has had the chance to catch up on yet, and that is The Boys Season 3. I went with Anthony Starr, who plays Homelander on The Boys. His performance is so incredible and so like fun and scary at the same time. He has that perfect balance of just being unhinged and scary, but also so fun and charismatic that you want to watch his downward spiral, you know. And I think he stands in for a lot of cool political commentary and social commentary without being super obvious and direct in the performance. It doesn't feel like he's doing like an impersonation of anyone in particular or anything like that. He's playing Homelander, you know, and his arc and his performance, I think, carry this season. It's slightly a weaker season for me of The Boys, but whenever he's on screen, it's incredible. And I think he carries the show going forward, and I can't wait to see what he does in the future seasons. I think he's going to be getting some Emmy love before we know it. And I honestly think he's going to be kind of the big breakout star of The Boys cast going forward.
All right. So I've seen the first two seasons of The Boys, so I know how good Anthony Starr can be. I've not seen season three. However, my nomination is someone that Tristan is familiar with and someone that he failed to pick, someone he should have picked, and that is Matt Smith from House of the Dragon. You look at a show like that, and I think part of the reason that show succeeds, where I think a show like Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power failed as far as gaining viewers, is he was a known entity. He was like the sole kind of known entity going into the show. He's been in Doctor Who. He's been in various movies where people in shows like Rings of Power, you maybe recognize a couple of people from a couple, but none of them are like any kind of relative name. And I feel like him and Patty Constantine very much gave the two best performances of that show. But I think the biggest like acting moment of that show was pure improv on Matt Smith's part. We talked about it when that scene came out. We talked about it when that show came out, where he picked up the crown and put it on his brother's head. And I think, I don't remember if we ever ended up giving him MVP of the week, but I feel like there were numerous times where he was worthy of it. And there wasn't just that any kind of singular moment where Matt Smith was crushing it. There were times where he didn't have a single line of dialogue in an entire episode, but he almost felt like he was carrying that episode. And a lot of battle scenes, a lot of fight scenes. And he was, I think, a lot of people's standout favorite character of that show, and a lot of became a lot of people's almost favorite character in the Game of Thrones world because of that, and entering a world like that with a lot of various characters and a lot of different people can connect to. That's a pretty large and, you know, feat that he pulled off, and so that's why I wanted to give Matt Smith the best TV performance.
I understand that. For me, I went with Anthony Starr. I think Homelander has a lot of that too. He has the dynamic personality, where I think something that was also present in Matt Smith's performance, but is even more present in Homelander, is that there's this subset of the fandom that roots for him and thinks, you know, he's the hero essentially, and they don't really see like the flaws in the character. I think that part of the performance, I think, shows that Anthony Starr is doing such a great job with his character that he's actually inspiring people in the real world to kind of see his side and to understand even this crazed sociopathic character, see his perspective. And I don't necessarily think we've gotten enough of that from Damon as a character. I think Matt Smith is doing a great job so far, but I think that some of the timeline jumping on A House of the Dragon, some of the maneuvering around the character arcs, it makes it a little bit harder to follow the characters than it is on something like The Boys, where everything is kind of like played right, you know, in front of you, and you're along with the characters pretty much in all their conniving plans and things like that the whole time. And I felt a little bit lost on Damon's character throughout the series of House of the Dragon so far. So for me, I went with Anthony Starr because I think he just nails that performance, and I think the character is just a bit more put together than Damon's is so far.
All right. I can understand that. I think a lot of the problem, I won't say problems, but a lot of the differences is Anthony Starr's character is in season 3, while Matt Smith's character is still in season 1. Where if we were to compare season 1 to season 1, I think you and I would both probably agree that Matt Smith takes it. And by the time that House of the Dragon gets to season 3, if Matt Smith is still there, we could say, oh, season 3, Matt Smith crushes and completely wipes Anthony Starr off the map. But we're comparing 2022 to 2022. With that, I haven't seen it, but I understand your points of the more developed, where I think Matt Smith just could be a casualty of where his show is compared to Anthony Starr's. And so with that, I will relent and agree to give a handy to Anthony Starr for best TV performance for his performance.
I'm sure he appreciates it, Joe. You never know. Matt Smith's character could be killed off episode 1 of season 2. You know, that's how the show works sometimes. We could go premiere episode, scene 1, all of a sudden, Matt Smith's head is no longer attached, you know? No more handies for him.
All right. And I believe that takes us to our next category. And I will start this off. And for my pick for biggest surprise of 2022 was a show all about surprises, and that is The Rehearsal on HBO Max. It's just a show all about surprise. You could watch this show. I was like, biggest surprise, because I kind of forgot what we called this category. It was like a biggest surprise moment or biggest surprise as far as, I don't know, I didn't even know that this was coming or what it was, but as soon as it hit, I thought it was great. And I'm like, honestly, this show fits both of those thoughts. It was a show I didn't know existed, and as soon as I watched it, I'm like, I have to watch every single episode right now, and that's basically what I did. Pretty much all the other shows I watched this year, if I didn't know that they existed, didn't get as high of anticipation for the next episode as much as The Rehearsal did. And all of the shows I knew about, it's their relation between knowing about them and not knowing about them compared to excitement, enjoyment, didn't match up quite with the rehearsal. So I kind of had to be, what was my biggest surprise? And it was the show that kept surprising me every episode, and that's The Rehearsal on HBO Max. If you don't know, basically, we talked a little bit about it as we started this show a few months ago, but essentially Nathan Fielder would work with people to rehearse them, people who have anxiety or wanted to get through something or tell someone something. He would rehearse it with them over and over and over and over again, and it became this bigger scope thing throughout into almost this thing where he was mind-fucking himself almost. And it's one of those things that's almost impossible to explain if you haven't watched it. But I don't know how you can give biggest surprise to anything other than the proposal or the rehearsal.
Yeah, The Rehearsal, definitely a great surprise. For me, I went with a series that was on a platform that is so off the radar that we never even really talk about it on this show. And that's on Apple TV Plus. And this year they had the series Severance, produced by Ben Stiller. And created by Dan Erickson, who I don't know from anything. It sounds like from the story of it that he was just some guy who wrote this script and had it kind of sitting around in the nowhere land of Hollywood. And he was working some dead-end job. Then all of a sudden, Ben Stiller sees this script and says, oh, man, we got to make this. This is actually great. So you have this kind of story of this guy living his normal life that gets pulled into the Hollywood success story. I think that's kind of cool. But the plot of this is that it follows people who work in this mysterious office, and the gimmick of it is that when they come and go from the office, their memories are wiped. So essentially who they are in the office is like a little newborn baby that has no memory or knowledge of anything outside of the office, nothing about the real world. All they know and understand is what they do for a living, and that's it. And when they leave the office, all of their knowledge and memories of what they did for work is erased again, and they go back to the normal life. So the appeal of it is, hey, I get to have this high-paying job that doesn't even cross my mind at all. I don't even got to think about it. I just walk into the elevator and walk out. It's like nothing even happened. And I can go about my day, you know, watch the movie, sit around, hang out with my family, not even think about work at all. You know, you have the severance of work and life. And you just follow the people mostly who are inside the office, people who have this mystery of what is the outside world, what is this office I'm working on, you know, what is my Audi like? Why would they make this choice to put their life like this? And if we sever that connection, what happens to me? You know, if Adam Scott is the lead of the show, and Adam Scott in the real world is kind of this depressed, divorced alcoholic without a lot of friends. And then in the office world, he's kind of like the peppy, you know, type A manager who everyone kind of looks up to and appeals to and loves. And you get that contrast of like, okay, if I sever this, you know, is that connection, is that person inside completely gone? And who is that person? So you have all kinds of really interesting questions. The guy is a surprise. It was something that came out of nowhere. It was on Apple TV, not something we pay attention to. And it was from this random guy who Ben Stiller happened to read the script of and thought that it was so great that he wanted to direct it and make it work. So for me, this is my great surprise. And I'm definitely hoping people will watch it more because it's super. I mean, it won a lot of awards, got a lot of acclaim, but it's not seeming like it's getting talked about on the same level as like some of the bigger shows. And I feel like this should be like a Stranger Things level success for Apple TV.
Yeah, I get that. But at the end of the day, Nathan Fielder accidentally raised a kid, and he wasn't really planning on it. And it was one of the. And it's hard for me to argue against your show because I haven't seen it. I've just heard good things about it. But I almost feel like that's one of those things that happens all the time, is there's just this kind of show that people talk about, and especially if it has produced by. And Nathan Fielder kind of has promise with shows like this in the past, like he has Nathan for You and that type of thing, but I just feel like White Lotus is different but kind of similar in a way, and it's just one to me that is just one of those shows that people talk about and it gets its Emmys, but there's just to me there's just always those shows where I haven't ever seen a show like The Rehearsal before.
I'll say one thing, Joe. I love The Rehearsal, so I'm not going to fight you too hard on this category, especially because it might save Severance for one or two more categories further along in the conversation. But I will say that The Rehearsal is not something I thought of for this category, but it fits very, very well. I was really surprised by The Rehearsal, and I'm familiar with Nathan For You, but I'm not a person who watched every episode or anything like that. I'd seen clips, I'd seen a couple episodes here and there, and I heard about the show, The Rehearsal, and you watch it and you think, what is this? What am I watching? I gotta tell everybody that I know to watch this. You know, I feel like that's something that this category, when I was picking something for this category, I thought, what is that, like that bug, you know, where you get it and you think, I gotta tell everybody I know about this because I am hearing nobody talk about this and I want to talk about this. And yeah, The Rehearsal fits that perfectly. So I'm caving to you, Joe. Even though I think Severance is a great, great show, it's hard to argue when you haven't seen it. And it's, I don't want to argue against The Rehearsal because I loved it and I think it fits the category really, really well.
Yeah, I think my difference between mine and yours pick is I just feel like yours, like if you want to talk surprise, it's just a show you didn't really have any anticipation for. You watched it and you're like, wow, that was really good. And I'm sure there are twists and turns that surprised you. But with The Rehearsal, every 30 seconds, there was like some insane surprise where you were like, what the hell? So not only were you surprised that you, a show you had no anticipation for, that it's good. It's like every episode, every 30 seconds, 5 minutes, there was like some mind-blowing thing that you were completely surprised by. And I think that's why it made my list.
I will say, I think Severance fits that category. Every episode, I was jaw-dropped, especially the finale. If you're watching Severance, you know, that finale, I feel like I didn't breathe for the entire hour of the finale. It was incredible, and it's under the radar right now, but I'm hoping that Joe will watch it so we can maybe give season two some more love, you know, next year.
All right, yeah, I'll try to watch it. I have Apple TV. I'm keeping tabs of how many awards all of these streaming services win, including the ones you may not want to win. And next, we will go to Scene of the Year. This could be a scene in a movie, a scene in a TV show. This is just, hey, what did we think the best scene of the year was? And I will let Tristan start.
This was tough for me because there's so many, especially when you include TV shows and you include movies. And you think of like the scene like in Stranger Things season 4, the running up that hill, you know, montage. And that's such an iconic moment. But I didn't go with that one. I went with a scene that got mentioned for a second before on this podcast during our best actor conversation, and that is the final crowning of King Viserys Targaryen in House of the Dragon. I think that moment of the crown dropping, the picking up of the crown, I don't want to tell you much about if you haven't seen the show, but that was such an incredibly powerful scene for me, and I loved it. And I think it for all of the faults that I had in House of the Dragon, I think that kind of brought it all together and made me realize what I was watching it for and made it all kind of pay off, even for all of the ups and the downs. And that's something I'm going to look back on as like a peak moment, not just of House of the Dragon, but of the entirety of Game of Thrones. And for a series that was so beloved and fell off a cliff so hard, I think this is kind of a moment that I think cements the comeback that House of the Dragon really is. The kind of, we were at the bottom and now we're at the top again, type of thing. And I'm really looking forward to season 2 if this is what they're going to give us here.
All right, yeah, so I want something a little different, a show we haven't talked about before, a show I think Tristan may have expected to litter throughout more of my picks, but I think it could be no, it's only in one other category, and I picked The Prison Escape from Andor. Them chanting One Way Out, them planning it, you kind of see the previous episode, them slowly start to plan it, and this big action scene, everything throughout the entire episode I thought was great. Throughout was great, but the actual prison scene escape itself, when them kind of having to go through the plan and realizing the one thing they've been chanting, the name of that episode, One Way Out, and them going through and taking out the guards and controlling the tower, and I think it was almost one of the more powerful and relatable scenes in a way, and I really, really enjoyed it. I think Tristan, your pick was great too, and that was one I debated as well. These were kind of my top two, so it's kind of fun that we both picked these scenes.
Yeah, I love your scene. It was definitely on my radar. That episode was, that whole arc is just incredible. I think it's the peak of Andor, but for me, if you're looking at specific scenes, I think that crowning scene is just an individual specific moment that I think really cements the series, you know. And as much as I think that finale breakout is incredible and I was really moved by it and I was, you know, teary-eyed watching that in Andor, I never thought I would be teary-eyed for Star Wars again, but here they were making me cry at Disney Plus. So I think that moment definitely deserves the nomination, but for me, that crowning scene is just something that's going to stick with me for a long time. And if I'm talking scenes, I'm thinking like a moment, or like, you know, that's for me what I'm thinking of, not necessarily like a whole entire finale of an episode, but like a couple of moments that just stand out. So for me, that's what I went with.
All right, here's the deal, Tristan. We could go back and forth debating the Andor escape or the crowning of King Viserys, but the more I think about the crowning of King Viserys, the more I'm like, especially all your points you brought up, even before you brought them up, that's kind of what I was thinking and leaning towards. So I will relent this time, and I will say the winner and the receiver of the handy is the crowning of King Viserys on HBO Max, on House of the Dragon for HBO Max. So HBO Max currently leads now with two. Prime and Netflix each have one. So we will see how this works itself out. And we're going to go to couple of the year next. And I'll start first because I went last time. We're going to stay with House of the Dragon because my pick is not the couple you may think, but a couple who looked in the background, a couple who should be couple goals, a couple that everyone should aspire to be. And that is Rhaenys and Corlys Velaryon. I think throughout, maybe they're cousins or distant relatives, but in a show where you have a lot of toxic relationships, there seem to be one where they trusted each other, respected each other, worked together to achieve their goals, and were just all around a good couple. This was a category I very much struggled with because I was looking at like various reality shows I watched that had couples, and none of them stood out for me. Especially since I watch a lot of dating shows and I bounce back and forth and I looked at all the shows and I looked at House of the Dragon. I was running through all the couples and I'm like, I can't pick any of the weird, creepy, incestual couples. And ultimately I saw Rhaenys and Corlys and I'm like, honestly, I can't imagine a better couple in 2022 than those two. And so that is my nomination, Corlys and Rhaenys Velaryon from House of the Dragon.
For me, I went with a show we just talked about. It won't be my... But I think I might be able to win you over on the pitch here, Joe. And this is from another nomination from Severance. But this is for Bert and Irving, a couple in Severance who are played by Christopher Walken and John Turturro. I think the fact that they had those A-list actors in this cute little budding gay couple makes me want to nominate this. And I think the fact that they are in that situation where these are both people within the company, so they're kind of like the newborn people who are new to the world, kind of like discovering things for the first time. So you get a really cute kind of first time romance between these two A-list actors who are, of course, you know, older than you would necessarily think of as being in like this first romance, but you get kind of like that cute high school love story kind of aesthetic to these men falling in love for the first time. And you also get that conflict of, if we left this company, who would we be? You know, what kind of person would I be outside? Is there any chance at all we'd even be friends, let alone romantic partners? Do you have a husband? Do you have a girlfriend, a wife? Who are you outside of this at all? And we're never going to know. So should we pursue this or should we not? So I think the conflict of their relationship is really kind of ingrained in the conflict of the show. And I love that it's two A-list actors who are willing to do a performance like this and in scenes like this. So yeah, I had a great time with this couple and I rooted for them and I cried for them and I can't wait to see what happens in season two. God, that cliffhanger at the end of the first season, you know, I'm still sweating, but yeah, that's my nomination.
I kind of like that dynamic, the like kind of office couple, but they also don't know, or like kind of the, you know, everyone talks about like the work wife or the work husband, but mm-hmm. they don't know what their life is like outside of the company. They don't even know what their own life is like outside of the company. Like, what if they're both single and they're just not together because of it? And it's an interesting dynamic, and it's hard to.
You gotta give some love to Severance, Joe. Come on. I've been trying to push Severance right. episode. You gotta give me one.
We will go with your couple from Severance. Because I feel like mine was just more their dynamic. There wasn't really like the storyline around them, but mine was more their dynamic. But yours has like an interesting dynamic and also more of a storyline, it seems like, built around them. So I will go with your... What were their names? So I can type it in here.
Bert and Irving.
Burton or Irving. Definitely not a play on Burton Ernie or anything.
No, they're not gay. There's no gay there. They're roommates, Joe. They were roommates.
Yeah. All right, give me just a quick second to update my document here so I can keep track. So with that, our winner of Best Couple goes to Burton Irving from Severance on Apple TV Plus, giving Apple TV Plus its first nomination. Congrats to them. And now we move on to reality show moment. This was a category I was hyped up to start with. I was excited. And then I sat down and thought about it. Reality show streaming, in my opinion, has been lacking this year. Both seasons of Love is Blind were okay. The Ultimatum on Netflix was fine. I've never been a big Too Hot to Handle fan. And so it felt very lacking. And thankfully, we had a savior in the reality show world this season. And that is the Detroit Lions. Because Hard Knocks, even if you're not a Detroit Lions fan, I feel like most NFL fans and most people that watch Hard Knocks agree that the Detroit Lions season was one of the best seasons of Hard Knocks of all time, rivaling that of the Ravens season from, I think, 2001, 2002 with Shannon Sharp. And I will say that the best moment of that show was University of Michigan graduate Aiden Hutchinson singing Billie Jean as part of his rookie hazing slash initiation. And so that is my nomination. Aiden Hutchinson singing Billie Jean on Hard Knocks for HBO Max. Tristan, I know you're not as big of a reality TV connoisseur as I, so your options were maybe a little bit more limited as far as what you watched. So I'm curious.
Yeah, I watched a couple of reality shows this year. Not nearly the level of you, but this is the first time so far that we've actually had a crossover because I picked the exact same moment that you picked. I think this is a really fun moment. And for me, it was early on in the show too, so I'm always going to remember watching that and being like, oh, it's going to be fun to talk about that on the episode, you know? And I really that moment stuck out for me. And it's one that, especially the whole Hard Knocks series, one that I feel like was really universal and fun. And even if you don't know football, there's moments like that that I think make it feel like this universal experience that can kind of connect to people even outside of the specific niche of football fans, you know?
All right, yeah. And I feel like we don't have much to talk about. It was great. Might talk about this show a little bit more as we move through the reality show because I kind of packed them all together. You may see why when you see my nominations. But with that, so like I said, so now we can officially say the winner of Best Reality Show Moment, the winner of the first reality show handy, goes to Aiden Hutchinson singing and dancing to Billie Jean for his teammates as part of his rookie initiation slash hazing for Hard Knocks on HBO Max. And now we move on to Best Reality Show Persona. And I didn't even look up anybody because I knew in my heart and in my mind there was one person, one man who should win this award. And that is Motor City Dan Campbell himself on Hard Knocks on HBO Max. I know I'm biased here. I know other people who maybe aren't NFL fans, aren't Hard Knocks fans, might have watched 1,000 shows and he wouldn't have even made their list of the top 25 reality show personas. But he was the reason you watched that. He was the reason people came back and watched that show. People wanted to see what is he like behind the scenes. And I feel like there was no one else I could even think to nominate besides Dan Campbell.
I actually do have a nomination for this, Joe, because I watched a reality show this year called Dragula. It's a horror-themed drag show where each of the performances are based off of different horror characters or horror themes. And for me, a standout performer on that show was Victoria Black, the performer who won this season. The premise of the show is that people who had been on the show previously, but they lost and never got to go to the finale, so now they get to have their comeback chance. And Victoria, she was on season 2 way back in the day, and she was a runner-up on season 2, and now she gets to come back all these years later and have a comeback performance. So I nominated Victoria Black. I think it was a really fun series for me. I'm not at all into reality show or at all into drag, but this was a unique show and one that I had a good time with, and I think Victoria was a personality that I attached to a lot in there, so I nominated her.
All right, I'm going to be honest. You recommended the show, and my girlfriend and I tried to watch it. We got like an episode and a half in, and we just realized that it's not for us. Neither one of us could get into it, and we just haven't watched it. And so for me, I feel like if you aren't an NFL fan, if you aren't a Hard Knocks fan, and you were just watching that show, I feel like Dan Campbell and that persona and that personality is partially what's going to bring you back from week to week. And I don't even remember. I feel like I watched this last season that you recommended. That's the one my girlfriend and I watched because we're like, oh, this is All-Star. This should be like the best of the best, the most entertaining. And I don't even remember who she was. So it's hard for me to be like, they're the best reality TV persona if it's a show I watched like a month ago, and I don't even remember them.
Look, Dan Campbell was definitely a great personality. I think he brought me in, and when I was watching that show as an outsider, I think he was definitely the person that kept me watching episode to episode. So, you know what, Joe, you're the expert. I made my case, but you can go ahead and give Dan Campbell the win here. He's got to win something this season.
The man, Campbell. Hey, we won, like, a lot of games toward the end of the season, and we could still make the playoffs. The odds are not in our favor, but we can. So, with that, Mr. Motor...
It wasn't long ago you were telling us to fire Dan Campbell in the group chat, so, I don't know, now you're all of a sudden giving him awards.
Because he was 1-6 at one point, and things were looking pretty grim, and then he got us back to 7-7, and I was like, okay, we're rolling, we're going to be playing meaningful football in January, which is not anything that the Detroit Lions are used to. And so, Dan Campbell can win his awards. And now we're going to be debating best reality show. I feel like I know where each of us are going. I feel like you're going to hit me with Dragula. I'm going to hit back with the show I picked, which, if you couldn't tell at this point, it was Hard Knocks. All the other reality shows were disappointing this year. I didn't realize it until I went and tried to pick through. I didn't want to pick Hard Knocks for all three reality show categories, but none of the rest were even close to deserving. Tristan, was I right? Did you pick Dragula?
I did. You know, great show. A lot of great drama. A lot of great contestant drama. You know, low triangles. People storming out saying they're going to quit because of all the drama. A lot of great performances. You know, I love my horror. So it was really cool to see stuff like The Ring. And there's a performance that brought The Ring to life, or something that brought The Predator out to life. So I really had a great time watching this. And I think, guys, talk about bringing an outsider in. I think Hard Knocks would have been a success if it made me like go and watch a season of football, you know, or watch a game of football. But for me, Dragula was enough of a success that I was like looking into other drag shows and looking into other reality shows with a similar kind of premise, and maybe going and watching like other seasons of that show. So for me, I can only say, as an outsider looking in, Dragula did more to pull me than Hard Knocks did. You know, I enjoyed the episodes of watching Hard Knocks, but it didn't make me go and watch a game of, you know, the NFL this season. I haven't seen a single second this whole season, you know, but I'm checking out other drag shows.
Because of Hard Knocks, the Detroit Lions Ford Field sold out its first game of the season, which hadn't happened in like 10 years. Off of a 3-13-1 season, we were not expected to be good this year, but people were so hyped going into the season because of Hard Knocks. There was a tension around the Lions for the first few weeks because of Hard Knocks. People are rooting for the Lions now because of Hard Knocks. I understand your point. I get your point. But I also counter it with, I went into the show hoping to like it, wanting to like it. I got an episode and a half in, and my girlfriend and I were both like, we're out. This isn't what I'm here for. And we both like reality competition shows. We both like reality shows. And I guess my girlfriend as a barometer. If I were to guess, what show would she be more interested in, Dragula or Hard Knocks, before she watched either one, I would be like, oh, it's Dragula, no question. She was the one that first was like, because I figured she would be into it, so I didn't even say anything. She was the one like, oh, do we have to keep watching this? I'm not into it. And I was like, oh, I'm not into it either. Let's stop. Where she got mad when I watched Hard Knocks without her. And so I
feel... Good points. So, if we're using Joe's fiance as our barometer here, then I believe we should go with Hard Knocks, because that did appeal to me in its own way, you know. Yeah. But for me, I like Dragula. It had the performance aspect. For me, when I watch reality shows, I like the competition. I like the performance. I like, you know, the fact that each week it was bringing in a different thing. And for Hard Knocks, I felt like each episode I was getting, okay, they're gonna like do some training stuff, and then they're gonna like talk about it, and then they're gonna go to the next week, and they're going to do some more like training stuff. And for the Dragula, I felt like I was getting more surprises week to week. I wasn't going to know, I had no idea what the theme was going to be, what the looks were going to be, who the guests were going to be, who celebrity judges were going to be. So for me, that was more fun to watch each week, whereas Hard Knocks, I felt like I was watching it and I was like, all right, it's good, but I'm not sitting there like, oh man, I can't wait for the next episode to see what they're going to do, because they're going to do what they did last week.
Yeah, I get those points, but I am not relenting on this. So if you want to not relent, right, we can sit here until the next 3 hours debating why Hard Knocks should be Dragula.
You know what? Joe is the more of the reality show guy. So I'm gonna go ahead and relent. But next year, Joe, next year I'm checking off 100 reality shows. I'm gonna watch more than you. I'm gonna make sure that I can dominate the reality show category of 2023.
All right, then I'm gonna get my girlfriend in here, and she can nominate Married to Medicine or World Karma or whatever the other reality shows she watches that I can't get into that are just basically ripoffs of The Real Housewives of wherever. But yeah, so I'm trying to see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All right, HBO Max is though that reality category helped HBO Max. They currently have 5 handies.
Congrats. That's cheating, you know.
Congrats.
You couldn't like give us each other 1 or 2, you know, give a little.
Congrats to Hard Knocks for sweeping the reality show categories.
Rigged, rigged election.
The other shows need to step up their game. Hey, we have The Circle coming out starting in 2 days, so I'll have to keep that in mind. I'm going to keep a running list this year, so it's easier for me to go back at the end of the year and hopefully try not to forget everything, because it was very hard to look things up. I would look up HBO Max 2022 shows, and shows like Peacemaker didn't pop up. So I would have to go onto the web, go onto the services and like try to dig through and see, figure everything out. So hopefully I didn't miss anything. Hopefully you don't drop one on me that's like, oh, I completely forgot that show came out this year. But with that, I'm going to move on to our next category, which is a more bigger category, and that is the category of best movie. And I don't remember. I kind of just told you what your pick was because I knew what it would be. So
you go first, Joe. You go ahead.
Okay, this is a movie that's already won a handy. It's a movie, and I'm going to say it might be recency bias. I don't know, but it was, in my opinion, because this is also Oscar time, so we're going to get a little bit more better movies on streaming services. But for me, the best movie to come out on streaming in 2022 was Rian Johnson's The Glass Onion. As a murder mystery, I liked it. For its commentary, I liked it. The performances were great. I liked the writing of it. Is it as strong as Knives Out? I don't think so. It's not quite as good, in my opinion. But if someone came to me and said, I prefer Glass Onion to Knives Out, I wouldn't even bother debating them because I feel like they are that close. And a lot of these streaming movies don't feel, or they, you can tell that they're streaming movies. It doesn't feel like there's good cinematography or like a production budget put into them. It just feels like they go to like a house and start filming there, where this definitely felt like it had a production budget and it felt like a bigger thing than your average streaming movie. And for that, I am choosing Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery, which is a dumb title. It should just call it, they should just retitle it A Benoit Blanc Mystery.
Yeah, I loved Glass Onion. I've seen it a couple of times. I'm going to have to say that this is yet another crossover. I was wondering if we'd get to like a crossover in one of our big, big categories. And I was honestly kind of panicking for half a second in my mind because I had Blonde as my runner-up. I loved Blonde. It was a fascinating, really, really unique movie. Something that was audacious for the streaming era, you know, and not very accessible and kind of dare you to turn it off. But as you were talking through Knives Out, I was thinking, you know what? I loved Knives Out. There were so many great moments in Glass Onion that are going to stick with me forever. And I watched it in the theater. So for me, I'm going to remember that as a special moment, too, of watching a Netflix movie in the theater full of people and everyone laughing and cheering for the cool parts and kind of like gasping at all the reveals, you know. And I almost nominated the hot sauce scene for the movie for a scene of the year, but I didn't know how to talk about it without spoiling anything in the movie. But great. Great movie, yeah, and I love the social commentary about like influencers and who becomes famous on the internet, and in a way how the people that we give success to is just kind of like a random selection of people, and who we praise aren't always necessarily worthy of the praise. I loved Glass Onion, and I love the fact that Rian Johnson like doubled down on so much of what worked in the first movie and just ran with it, you know, and he said, I don't care if people liked it or not, I'm going to have all the dialogue, I'm going to have all of the social commentary, it's going to be, you know, watching the internet in live action, it's going to be very online, but it's fun, and I'm very online, maybe that's why I liked it so much, but yeah, I love this movie a lot, and definitely an easy win for me.
Yeah, for sure, and maybe as things come out, it's specifically like a movie like Emancipation, which I probably should have watched before I nominated, because a lot of people are giving that a lot of high praise. But
as... White Noise, I'm also really looking forward to. That comes out in a couple of days, and I really wanted to see that before this episode, but I couldn't get myself around to it on the Christmas time and all that stuff, but I'm really looking forward to that. Noah Baumbach, Adam Driver, that's a great combination.
All right, so with that, we move to, so like we said, Glass Onion. Hey, it's won two handies. Congrats. Not everyone can get two handies, but Glass Onion, it's got two.
Double handy.
It's carrying Netflix right now. It's got Netflix. It's only two handies. And now we move on to Best TV Show. I went first last time. Tristan, I'll let you go first. You may sway me because I have a pick, but I don't know how strong I feel in my pick. But it depends. You may name a show, and I'm just like, I'm not about it. I have to fight for mine now.
Yeah, I had a lot to pick from on here. I feel like comparatively to movies, streaming really kind of nailed TV this year. There was a lot of stuff that I wish I could have talked about, like Andor and The Boys. Those are all really, really good shows. But when you compare them to other things and other levels, it just didn't really hit for me in the same level as Severance. We've talked about Severance a lot. It's going to be hard for me to argue it this episode, but House of the Dragon was a close second as well for me. Those are both really high up there, but I think Severance, in terms of a compact individual like season, I was on the edge of my seat. I couldn't wait week to week to week to what was going to happen next. I felt myself, you know, looking up every YouTube video I could find about Severance, trying to figure out what was going on and, you know, get theories and things like that. But it was equally frustrating because not a lot of people were watching it. So I felt like I was watching this little tiny hidden nugget, you know, of gold that I found on hidden on Apple TV somewhere that no one else was talking about. But yeah, I had a great time with it. And I think its commentary is very relevant to 2022, whereas stuff like House of the Dragon is great, great TV. But Severance feels like TV that's great for right now, as we're dealing with kind of labor rights and how we're connecting our work life to our personal life. And, you know, people are finally trying to sever that connection and be like, you know what, I'm not going to answer the phone or the emails when I'm not at work because I'm not getting paid and you don't own me right now. So I think the labor right movement that's been happening in the last year feels like it's very, very connected to Severance. Not literally, but it feels like it's timely in the way that Severance came out just in the teat of this. So yeah, Severance, I'm nominating as a TV show of the year.
All right, my pick is one you made a case for, and this will be another one where you watched my show and I didn't watch your show, and that's Andor. It's one of those, especially, maybe it's lifted a little bit, because it's not the show that I enjoyed the most, I would say, from Star Wars in 2022, but I can't, anyone that says it's not the best and well-made Star Wars show of 2022 is out of their minds. I feel like you remove all the Star Wars from it, it's still a great show that deals with a lot of things, political things in our time. It's well written. Tony Gilroy, I think, crushed it. And to my opinion, should have put everyone else working in Star Wars right now, you know, on their heels. And hopefully they pay attention and get something out of Andor. It felt like three movies in one, or like kind of like three movies back to back to back, separated into these TV arcs. You took a character like Andor, who no one really had any care for or care about in Star Wars, and made them kind of this almost like central figure in a way, this representation for the rebellion, someone who came from literally nothing but was affected by a previous war, now thrusted into a different war, and a character you could connect to. It dealt with themes of immigration and capitalism and the prison industrial complex and all of these modern things, but took it and Tony Gilroy took it and just changed it, altered it in just minor ways to make it fit into a galaxy far, far away. And I look at it and I'm like, I don't know what they could really have done differently to make it better. And just a great ensemble cast, but also with a great lead with Diego Luna as Andor as well.
For me, what's pulling me towards Severance over Andor is just that week-to-week hunger to watch it. And as I was watching Andor, you mentioned that it feels like, you know, three or four movies put together, and that doesn't feel like a TV show to me. I never watched Andor and thought, oh man, I can't wait for the next episode. I gotta get up at 3 a.m. and hit play so I can watch Andor like the second that it drops, because I gotta see what happens, you know. And I watched it when I got to it. I won't lie, there were weeks where I was watching two or three at a time because I just kind of didn't. I was like, you know, I'll sit it off and wait till the arc is done, and then watch the whole arc, because I'm not dying to watch it week to week. But Severance, it was like, as the episode was ending, I was like, is there any way I can hack Apple TV to just get the next one to like pop up and start playing, you know? I'll do anything you want me to do, Apple. I was begging for it, and I would literally sit there at like 11:59 hitting the button waiting for the episode to drop on Apple. So for me, that's something about TV that I love, is just that week to week thinking about it constantly, wanting to know what's happening, the mystery box of it all. And Andor was great entertainment and really, really great social commentary. Everything said about it is true. I thought it was great, great TV. But when I'm thinking about television, like the best of the best, I'm thinking about when I sit there and I'm not watching it and I'm thinking about it, you know, and I didn't get that for Andor, but I got that for Severance.
Yeah, I get all your points. I knew as soon as you said Severance, I was probably going to switch, just because everything you've said about Severance makes me want to go up, like, quit the episode and go upstairs and watch it. It's honestly, I'm going to say right now, with everything you've said, Apple TV has done a horrible job marketing this show, because every image I've seen of it is just Adam Scott sitting in a boring looking office. And I'm like, that show just looks boring. I had no idea what the plot was, no idea what the premise was. And if we had a category for worst marketing job of the year, right now, I'm saying without a doubt, hands down, it should go to Severance, because the show you're telling me is not anywhere near the show I thought it was. And every time I go on my Google Chrome and it throws like two or three different shows at me, and Severance is always like one of the first shows. And every time I see it, it just looks so absolutely and completely boring, because I thought it was just a show that took place in an office. Like, basically someone saw The Office and was like, what if we make The Office, but instead of a comedy, we make it just a regular drama? And I'm like, that sounds absolutely boring. And so, with that, Apple TV, I believe, is winning its second handy of the year with Severance.
Number two. Severance holding Apple TV up by its, you know, its bootstraps. Severance and Servant. You know, watch Servant too.
All right, give me just a minute. Let me add Severance to the list so I can keep a running total. How do you feel? Did you expect Severance to win two handies?
I was really hoping that it would win at least one. You know, I know that you hadn't seen it, but I was really hoping to push for it, because I want any people that we do happen to have in our audience actually to check out the show and watch it. I really would love for you to watch it, because it's a show that, even though it got the awards, it's not getting all the attention that I necessarily think it should. Especially as we're getting towards the end of the year right now, and people are putting together like their best of lists. I wish I was seeing this on like every single list, because to me it's really fascinating and really relevant.
All right. When I watch this show, I better like it, because if I watch it and I'm like, this show's dog shit, Tristan don't know anything, I'm going to be like, I'm going to go back in time and give Andor the win for best TV show. So
yeah, if the show never comes back after this, you know it's because Joe watched Severance and he hated it, and we you know, ended our friendship after that.
Exactly. And so with that, I'm going to let you kick off this next category, which is biggest waste of bandwidth. This is the show that came out, or the TV movie or whatever that came out, and we're just like, who greenlit this? Who made this show? Who made this movie? This whole thing is just so bad top to bottom. I feel like it's wasting server space being stored somewhere. Tristan, what is your pick?
Look, I had a couple of different directions I wanted to go on this. I thought for a second about nominating a Blockbuster on Netflix. I thought that was just kind of a miserable waste of time, kicking down but not even really kicking, you know, just slightly tapping your foot. But for me, I went with a different route, and I went with Westworld season 4. This most recent season of Westworld was just such a mess and very disorienting, and it had some great episodes. But I think when you look at HBO Max as a whole, and the fact that Westworld, even though this was a mixed season, ended on a cheap cliffhanger, and now it's canceled. And not only is it canceled, but it's not on HBO Max anymore, Joe, because HBO Max has pulled a bunch of their shows, and I had to get that in here somewhere, Joe. We couldn't let HBO Max get off with a nice, clean, easy, oh, you're so great year, in the year when they deleted all their stuff and they cracked down on so many things. You know, I could have put Batgirl in this nomination spot right here. I thought about doing Batgirl from a biggest waste. So much of a waste that you didn't even release it, you know. Maybe I'll switch my nomination live on air to Batgirl, you know. I'm nominating Batgirl for biggest waste of bandwidth. You know, so bad at this, it's just getting, hit the delete button, you know, just don't even put it out. What are you doing, HBO Max? Killing all your goodwill by deleting this stuff. I don't know what's going on over there, but you guys have a good shot at winning best streamer, and now you're going to just become the worst. I wouldn't be surprised if a year from now where we're talking about how HBO Max just flopped and became this nothing streamer filled with like nothing because they're deleting all their stuff. So I don't know what they're doing, Joe. I don't know what they're doing.
I'm going to pitch you my original nomination, and maybe you'll love that choice so much you're like, we have to go with this. But you pitched a second nomination. You switched from Westworld Season 4 to Batgirl. I'm going to pitch you another nomination after, and we can see what my first nomination was, the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special.
That was the first
kind of special we got with Werewolf by Night, kind of like a Halloween special. Wasn't the greatest thing. I mean, it was good. I enjoyed it, and it made me go, oh, I hope, and you and I both were kind of like, I hope that Marvel does more, like, kind of seasonal mini-movie special things. And then the Guardians of the Galaxy special came out, and it was just a big ball of nothing. It didn't really reveal anything as far as the MCU moving forward. It didn't move the overall plot of the MCU moving forward. It wasn't even very, like, Christmassy. I would have almost been fine if they threw canon out the window and just did a straight-up, like, old-school variety special. The plot didn't make sense. The cinematography wasn't good. The fact that James Gunn was behind it was astounding because, to me, it's the worst thing he did. If this holiday special came out and was great, or it was at least on par with Werewolf by Night, I think he'd be in strong MVP of the Year candidate when we get to it, between that and Peacemaker. But because it sucks so bad, I can't have him anywhere near the MVP running, even though I really enjoyed Peacemaker, and it was a big topic of discussion early in the year. But my second pick for...
Before you go to that, I will say that I had James Gunn down for my MVP, especially with all the meta DC stuff, and then I realized about the holiday special, and I was like, can't do that. Can't put him on there. Gotta hit delete on that one.
All right, so my second nomination is just all the things HBO Max has deleted. Apparently HBO Max is telling us these things are a massive waste of bandwidth. We got to delete them. And, hey, if HBO Max is winning Streamer of the Year, we can't knock them if they're saying all these things are a big waste of bandwidth. So that's my second nomination, is all of the things HBO Max deleted.
I like that. So how do we feel, Joe, between Batgirl and just all of the other things, you know?
I mean,
all of the deleted stuff.
We could
just say HBO Max. HBO Max in general is apparently a waste of my bandwidth because they got to delete some stuff.
I like going more specific with all of the things HBO Max deleted. It's kind of funny. And especially now with some of our MVP picks, like we gave Charles Dickens MVP of the Week because he wrote some things that were inspired some of the things that had come out that week and our movie of the week. So I like having a fun pick in here, especially with the category like biggest waste of bandwidth and going with all of the things HBO Max deleted.
I like that. That's a good one.
All right. So a lot of things just won handies, but I'm going to just chalk this up and say HBO Max won this one. So really, HBO Max.
Rack it up the handies, HBO.
HBO Max is running away with some of these handies. I wish I could get this many handies, you know. Maybe one day if I become rich and famous, I too can get a handy. All right. And if you want to write to us and message us about the name of our award show, message Tristan, because he's the one that came up with it. And as soon as he said it, I'm like, well, it can't be anything else now. We have to give out handies. So I have to figure out where I put the thing that has out right there. Boom. Our next category is one I have a hot take for, so I'm going to let Tristan go first. And that's our MVP of the year. Tristan, single entity, whether character, movie, character, actor, director, writer, producer, what's your single entity that is your MVP of the year?
Yeah, I really dug around for this. There were a few different options. I was thinking of Tony Gilroy, who kind of shaped the direction of Disney Plus for the year. I think he did a great job of like single-handedly being like, oh, we're actually going to take Disney Plus seriously now. And I think he deserves credit for that. It's like kind of like single-handedly guiding a streamer. I think Ryan Murphy also kind of single-handedly guided a streamer this year. He had a great year on Netflix. So I think he has a shot for MVP of the year. But when I look at the list of movies this year that dropped, TV shows that dropped, nobody popped up on that list more than Jenna Ortega. I think you have her not on Wednesday. You have her in The Fallout. You have her all over streaming. I think she's not only on new streaming stuff, but on like movies that are dropping. You know, X was a huge streaming hit. Scream was a big, huge streaming hit. So I think Jenna Ortega is a massive it girl, and she dominated this year. She's all over the place on streaming, and I think that she was one MVP on our show before, but I think the fact that Wednesday was so huge and the fallout was great and almost got onto my movie of the year list, to be honest, I think Jenna Ortega is having a great year and only going to go up from here. So I'm picking Jenna Ortega for my MVP.
All right, good pick. I think you had the same philosophy I had when it came to MVP. This is someone who couldn't be just great on one thing. This is someone who had to be across multiple shows, multiple movies, multiple platforms. And I'm picking someone that was a fan favorite character on an HBO Max show and multiple fan favorite characters on a Disney Plus show. And I am picking Dee Bradley Baker, who voiced all of The Bad Batch and The Bad Batch, as well as Eagly, Peacemaker's sidekick Eagle in Peacemaker. And I like my pick. I like your pick. How do you feel about my pick of Dee Bradley Baker? Someone who I feel like if we had done the show earlier, I think Dee Bradley Baker would have won a few MVP of the Weeks during the run of Bad Batch and may win for season 2 of Bad Batch when that drops January 4th.
I definitely think if you're still a Disney Plus weekly show, we'd be doing Dee Bradley Baker for the year here. But for me, I think Jenna Ortega, of course, I'm sure he voiced Eagly, but Jenna Ortega, I think, kind of transcends across multiple platforms, not just movies, but also TV shows. You know, she's got both. And I think when you're talking about a whole MVP of the entire year, you want to kind of check both boxes, right? Movies and also TV shows. And you want to check the original boxes, like, you know, she's on Wednesday, but you also want to check the what we pay for these for is not just the original content, right? You pay for them for, like, getting the new movies out there, too. And Jenna Ortega had a bunch of great new movies out this year, so I went for her because she has that wide range of covering all streaming platforms in all different ways.
Yeah, I'm not going to knock your pick. As soon as you said Jenna Ortega, I was like, I feel like that eclipsed my pick. Because if you're going to go MVP, your MVP, the NFL votes for the MVP. It's usually the best quarterback award at this point. You don't see kind of like a lineman, right, when MVP. And I feel like that's what Dee Bradley Baker is. He's a strong, great Pro Bowl lineman that everyone's like, oh, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. But he's never going to win the MVP. I feel like Jenna Ortega is more of what you think of when you win an MVP. Someone who is out there in front, at least led a series this year. I mean, I guess Dee Bradley Baker did lead a series, but even people who watched all of Bad Batch may not know what he looks like or even what his daily voice sounds like. So it's hard for me to pick. It's hard, I guess, when you're fighting against someone like Jenna Ortega to say that Dee Bradley Baker should win. I don't believe Tristan can hear me right now. He walked away from his microphone. I have no idea what he's doing. Hopefully he comes back soon because I really don't have much to say. Our next category is Alexa, cancel my subscription, which is basically the category of a moment that was so bad, so horrendous. You're like, I don't even want to pay for this damn streaming service anymore. Get this out of my face. It looks horrible. Sorry, I was explaining our next category. And I did say, I don't know if you heard. I don't know if I said this while you were on. But I officially relented and gave Jen Ortega the MVP of the year.
I like it. She had a great year.
Yeah. So I will kick off Alexa Cancel My Subscription because I believe it will anger Tristan. And it makes sense because it's Alexa, because it's an Amazon show. And that is, I don't even remember the person's name because it's kind of the moment that made me check out of the show. And if I only got Amazon Prime for the shows that they have and not for the delivery, this may have made me cancel my service because I'm like, well, there's nothing I'm interested in watching on this service for the next year. And that is when you find out that home dude on Rings of Power could be the king or could be this leader, but he's like, but I don't want to be. And I'm like, so this is just the Aragorn plotline all over again. And then I kind of noticed before that, oh, this is just kind of like Lord of the Rings plot lines redone. And so I'm like, oh, you're just redoing Lord of the Rings, but you just didn't fully have the rights to be able to do Lord of the Rings. So you're like, oh, we're going to do a prequel, but we're just kind of going to retell the same storylines. And as soon as he was like sitting in a bar or sitting in a tavern, just like Aragorn was, and he's like, and you find out, oh, he could be king, but he doesn't want to be. And I'm just like, this is stupid. And that's kind of when I stopped watching Rings of Power. And that is why my Alexa canceled my subscription, is when I basically realized, oh, this guy just has Aragorn's plotline. Cool. Don't care. Next.
All right. For me, my cancel my subscription moment was something that was actually bad. And it was, I talked about how when we watched Hard Knocks, it was kind of early on in the show, and I was kind of excited. I was like, ooh, you know, I can't wait to cover, you know, stuff outside of Disney Plus. And now I'm going to award something that was one of the big reasons I decided that I wanted to not cover only Disney Plus anymore, because I had to sit through Cheaper by the Dozen. And there's a moment in Cheaper by the Dozen where Zach Braff, the star of our movie here, he has to do a dance off against the ex, the evil ex of his new wife, you know. And to prove how good he is at dancing, Zach Braff tries to do a big split. You know, he jumps in the air and does a whole split, and he falls down, and of course, oh no, he hurt his legs, he can't get up now, you know. Oh, the dad did the splits. Oh, he hurt his legs, oh, he can't get up. Alexa, cancel my Disney Plus subscription. What am I paying for? What is this? What are we doing? What is Disney Plus giving me? I can't do it anymore, Joe. I can't do it anymore. We got to cover more than just Disney Plus, because if I'm talking about this every week, I'm going to go insane. Zach Braff did the splits and broke his legs. You know, like, what year is this? What? Why am I engaging with this? And it's still the bottom of my list for movies of the year, and largely because of this one specific scene where I watched it and I thought, this is not worth my 10 cents that I'm going to be paying to watch this.
All right. I'll counter your thing. I will say, ultimately, if you look at them both in a bubble, your moment is fundamentally worse on every level than my moment. However, your moment is from a movie aimed at kids starring Gabrielle Union and Zach Braff. Like, so it has a very low ceiling of how good it can be. Mine is this massive, big-budget show that Amazon, one of the biggest companies in the world, was basically funding all of their effort and energy into. It's like, this is the thing that's going to be a tentpole for Prime Video. And they're just like, but we're going to rehash all of the plot lines you already know. Where this wasn't like, it wasn't like you picked a moment from Andor or Mandalorian or something like that, where this is supposed to be a big tentpole Disney Plus. This is some minor little thing on the side that the people at the top of Disney Plus don't even care about. This was Amazon Prime's baby. And they were just like, we're not really going to come up with any new plot lines. We're just going to do the same plot lines again. And my moment's worse.
My counter to you, Joe, is that Rings of Power is great, actually, and really good. And
It's not.
Sure, there's a couple of rehashing moments. And maybe
they shouldn't have any rehashing plot lines. Yeah.
You watch Star Wars, Joe.
That's what Star Wars is built on. Lord of the Rings is kind of almost like the originator of a lot of things that we think about when we think of fantasy and all that. They should be out here originating. Star Wars is more about taking the things, elements you grew up with, remixing them, and presenting them in a new way. Where Lord of the Rings is all about new stories and creating stories, and they're just like, no, we're going to be like Star Wars and just rehash stories and present them in a new way. I feel like that's the difference between Star Wars and Lord of the Rings. Like, a lot of the fundamental tenets, a lot of the fundamental plot lines that we know of Lord of the Rings and fantasy all like originated with Tolkien and Lord of the Rings. Like, trolls were just kind of like before Tolkien were like the universe, and fairies were just kind of like the universal term for any magical creature, and Tolkien was the one that are like, no, these are what trolls are, these are what fairies are, these are what this is what this is, where they were before him were more universal. He was the creator, and it should be about creating new stories, not just, yeah, we're going to do the exact same stories over again.
Look, I'll say that Disney Plus sells us as like, oh, you got to set up a Disney Plus. We're going to be dropping stuff all the time, movies every week. You know, it's going to be great. It's going to be worth your money. And sure, Prime, maybe this show was not for you, but you're getting more out of Prime than just The Rings of Power. And I think Disney Plus is saying, oh, sign up for us. You got to watch your favorite things from your childhood brought back to life. Look, everyone loves Zach Braff. You watch Scrubs, you know. He was good in that show.
And if you had... difference is your movie was aimed at an 8-year-old. I guarantee if an 8-year-old is sitting next to you and that moment happens, they laugh.
Look, all right, sure. All right, to be fair, I do have the mind of an 8-year-old, so...
That's not an argument here, all right? I'm saying yours movie succeeded for who it was for. We didn't like it.
Succeeded for who?
We didn't like it because we're grown adults in the movie. Like, there are movies, like, certain family movies that are aimed at families, right? Where I feel like Cheaper by the Dozen was, like, a movie that's dumb and stupid and just made to make 7-year-olds laugh. And then it probably succeeded.
I would cancel my subscription for some dumb, stupid movie dropped on my Disney Plus that I'm paying for. But, you know, cancel my subscription.
Okay. If we didn't do this show, would you have watched Cheaper by the Dozen? If we weren't doing a Disney Plus rewatch, would you have watched Cheaper by the Dozen? That's like saying, oh, cancel my subscription, Disney Plus, because Puppy Dog Pals sucked.
Look, I may have watched it. Okay. Zach Braff was in it.
See, people watch Rings of Power, and that's one of the big complaints I saw about it was this is just Lord of the Rings, but they didn't get the full rights to Lord of the Rings, apparently, and so they can't do everything they wanted to do, and so they're just doing this, where no one's mad that Cheaper by the Dozen is a dumb kids movie because that's what it was going into it.
Look, I'm mad. I'm a little mad.
But, don't care about Cheaper by the Dozen. I'm kind of mad that Lord of the Rings Rings of Power wasn't better.
It was great. It was a great show.
Then why'd I stop watching it? Because it felt not interesting.
You had to go watch some more reality TV. You know, that's where the real entertainment's at.
I don't know if I believe your thoughts right now.
All right, look. I don't know if we're going to relent on this, Joe. But for me, I think if you're talking a moment that maybe we want to cancel, what's worse than canceling a podcast? You know, I said, let's not do this Disney Plus podcast. Let's do the hand plus.
Hey, I mean, I think I understand your argument, but my counter argument will always be Cheaper by the Dozen was not made for you, where Lord of the Rings Rings of Power was made for me, and it still made me not watch the show anymore. You wouldn't have watched Cheaper by the Dozen if we weren't doing a Disney Plus podcast at the time. I still would have watched Lord of the Rings Rings of Power, and I still would have stopped watching it.
It still would have been great, though, you know? Good show, great visuals.
I mean, spectacular
scope. Look, all right, Joe, you look. The one thing I'll say about Rings of Power is I was not very invested in the characters' narratives, you know? I would not say that I cared that much about what was happening on the screen, you know? So.
The show was great, but you didn't care about what was happening on screen? What kind of great show is this?
Look, I cared about some of the stuff, but I will say one of the things I didn't care about too much was. Oh, I want to be the king, but you know, I shouldn't be a king. I don't want to be king. You know, there wasn't a lot going on character-wise for that particular character. So maybe we can give it to your show. But Rings of Power, great show. Watch it, guys. You know, you're paying for Amazon Prime. Get yourself some great, great, epic sci-fi, epic fantasy. You know, you get fights, you get action, you get. You get cool buildings. You get a great fantasy show.
All right, I will. You know what? So I'm calling it right now. The Alexa cancel my subscription award. Ironically enough, is going to Amazon Prime for dude doesn't want to be king. I don't even know his name. I don't care to know his name. But Zach, he gets a handy.
It was Zach.
It may be
Zach Braff.
No, not Zach. So our next award, I will kick this off, is our worst streamer award. And my vote, if you've been paying attention to our podcast, you can probably figure out who it's going to. It's going to be the one who got replaced. Originally, the H stood for Hulu, and then Hulu didn't give a shit the entire time. We kept having HBO Max at the bottom, and HBO Max kept being flooded with House of the Dragon and other stuff we were actually watching, and I'm just like, screw it. From now on, the H in hand stands for HBO Max. And I'm just like looking through it. I didn't watch Prey, but I know Prey was a thing people talked about. And Chippendales is a show I'm liking, but no one seems to be talking about that. The only thing I'm looking forward to that they're releasing next year is a show I imagine not many people are, and that's How I Met Your Father Season 2. And it's just like when it came to Hulu this year, I'm not saying they offered a lot of horrible content, but they didn't really offer any great content except for maybe the stuff you would get through FX and other things. But the straight Hulu content it wasn't there. And so I'm just like, if you have YouTube TV, if you have DirecTV, what are you paying for? It doesn't really make sense. Especially now with Disney Plus going more adult, because there were thoughts and rumors that maybe some of the more adult Marvel content would be put on Hulu instead of Disney Plus. So really, honestly, if you have a way to watch like some of these other FX shows, I don't know why you have Hulu. It doesn't make sense to me, and I don't see any other streamer being picked for worst streamer.
Yeah, it was tough for me. I almost went for Prime, to be honest, because they have like one or two shows that are worth sticking it out for. And when I look at Hulu, I honestly don't feel like they have any shows that are worth sticking it out for, you know? Like, I look at Prime and I think, oh, well, you know, I'm gonna get to The Boys. It'll be good in a couple of months when The Boys drops. Invincible will drop, that'll be pretty good. And they have a pretty solid backlog. And yeah, I liked Prey a lot, but it was not like the greatest move of the year or anything like that. And I think each of these platforms has at least like one original movie that they could at least contend for being like one of the better movies of the year, you know, or one of the better TV shows of the year. And I think Hulu has a couple of like okay movies, a couple of okay TV shows. But yeah, I'm feeling like looking back at the year, looking back at this award show and our list last week where we talked about kind of like some of the more underrated hits of the year. We were kind of struggling to find stuff for Hulu that we hadn't talked about before that was actually worth watching. And yeah, for me, Hulu gets you a lot of stuff. Like, it gets you the FX stuff, it gets you a decent backlog, it gets you a decent amount of like network TV stuff. But as an original platform creating content, it's just not there for me. Even compared to stuff like Prime that's had a weak year this year, it's still beating Hulu for me.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, I understand they have the stuff with FX that I didn't really count, but it's going to be hard for me to ever say a thing like Prime is going to be bottom ever. Not because of the whole delivery aspect, but just because usually if I want to rent or rent a movie, Amazon Prime is where I go. Where I don't even know if Hulu really has that option of like newer movies you can rent and buy them. The Amazon Prime does, and I feel like that kind of gives it a leg up on all the rest of the competition, where it's going to be. Every other streaming service is going to have a strong year, and they're going to have to have another year like this for me to be like, oh, Amazon Prime was the worst streaming service, just because I do feel like they have a little bit of a leg up and have options that the other ones don't. But I always feel there's always going to be a streaming service that just drops the ball and doesn't really release anything or releases a lot of garbage. I don't know if Hulu really released a lot of garbage. They just didn't really release much good.
Yeah, I think Hulu needs to have some kind of big new hit. You know, they had Handmaid's Tale for a couple of years. That was a big, cool hit. And that's on like five, six seasons, maybe even more now. And that's really worn its welcome. You know, I'm not
No
really
one talks about it.
feeling like I need to talk about and watch Handmaid's Tale season six or whatever, you know. They need to get something exciting in there. And I don't,
Yeah.
with Disney Plus out there, I just don't necessarily feel like Disney cares that much about Hulu.
Yeah, I honestly think within 4 or 5 years, I wouldn't be surprised if Disney Plus stripped Hulu of all of its parts and took all of the original Hulu shows and took the whole FX deal. So all the shows that currently are from FX straight to Hulu now go FX straight to Disney Plus, and they essentially just sell off the name Hulu to a different company, because there's really no need for Disney Plus to have two streaming services, especially now with Disney Plus having parental controls and they can put more adult stuff on Disney Plus. I think that's part of why Hulu struggles. It's like if Disney Plus has anything good, they're going to want to put it on Disney Plus and not Hulu.
Yeah, you'd think Andor would be something that would be on Hulu if that theory was correct of like, oh, the more adult-oriented content's going to be dropped on Hulu. That would be something that would be on Hulu. But the fact that it was on Disney Plus to me shows that that is just not going to happen. Maybe under new leadership or like restored leadership, they could do a change in direction. You know, I could see Hulu going back to being that adult-oriented side of the things and Disney Plus being more of the family side of things next year. But we'll see how that goes.
We shall see. I mean, especially with Logan and both Deadpools being on Disney Plus, I don't understand why Disney would put anything on Hulu right now. But next, our second to last category, we're gonna go with most anticipated of 2023. And Tristan, I will let you go first this time.
This is very, very difficult for me because you think you have like easy answers and you look and there's just so much to pick from. And I really, honestly, I have two right here. And I have even at this moment not totally decided which of the two is going to be my choice. But for me, I had to go for the slightly more off-kilter choice. I know a lot of people are looking forward to the other one. So I'm going to go with Doctor Who coming back 2023 on Disney Plus. I think it's really, really exciting. I was a huge Doctor Who fan, so that's kind of why I'm most excited for it, because it's something that fell off my radar because it became very inaccessible. It was on one platform here, one platform there, and all of a sudden I was a couple of seasons behind, and I accepted, oh, I guess I'm just, you know, not going to watch Doctor Who anymore. I guess that's something I'm not a fan of anymore, because I'm not going to be able to catch up on it anytime soon, anytime easily. But look, it's on Disney Plus now. They're in this revival era. David Tennant is back in 2023 for some specials on Disney Plus, and David Tennant is such an iconic take on that character, such a hugely influential take on that character. And they're also introducing a new Doctor at the same time. So that's such a hugely exciting moment for Doctor Who and also for Disney Plus. We talked about, like, what is the brand for Disney Plus going forward? We just talked about that recently, and I think Doctor Who could be, like, the next big, huge IP hit for Disney Plus. They have Star Wars, they have Marvel, but they need something else, you know, something that can bring somebody in who's not necessarily already paying for Disney Plus, and I think Doctor Who could be that. I'm so, so, so excited. Maybe it's a personal pick, Joe, but I can't wait for Doctor Who.
All right. Yeah, my pick's a little different than yours. Off-kilter, probably one you wouldn't necessarily think I'd pick. Like, I thought about Bad Batch, I thought about Ahsoka, I thought of, like, a lot of Star Wars and Marvel
products. Last of Us was on my radar.
Last of Us and an option, but I feel like if I had played the game, that might be my pick, but I feel like partially with anticipation, it's more like, I don't really know what we're getting here. Like, Bad Batch Season 2, trailer's out, there's also already a Season 1, I kind of know what I'm getting with that. Ahsoka, I have a rough idea of what I'm getting with that. And so the show I picked is a streaming service we have not talked about yet, and that's Peacock, and my choice is The Continental. The show about the hotel from the John Wick franchise. I have no idea what that is. Is it going to be like an action fighting show where, like, each week, like, different people are fighting and we get to watch it? It's going to be more of like a drama and more of like just kind of almost like a Cheers, but where all of the guests are, instead of being like a mailman and this, they're all just hitmen. And it's kind of like that. I just don't know what to expect from this show, and that's why it's my most anticipated.
Yeah, I'm really curious about that one. That was definitely not on my radar. I'm curious, Joe, if you've seen the cast list for the show.
For
The Continental.
I know Lance Reddick is one of them, and that's it.
You've also got, seemingly in one of the leading roles, Mr. Mel Gibson in The Continental.
I mean, in a weird way, it makes me more excited, because what the hell? And on another way, I'm like, ah, that kind of sucks, because what the hell?
Yeah, I'm curious how that's gonna play out. They have tried to expand the John Wick universe a few times, and I'll be honest, I really, really liked the first John Wick. I thought John Wick 2 was also really, really good, and then John Wick 3 came in and tried to make it like a whole universe with all these new characters and all these new like clans and stuff, and I was like kind of out on that. That doesn't seem like what I necessarily was looking for, and I'm not super excited for The Continental. I mean, I'm going to watch it for sure, but I feel kind of mixed on like expanding the John Wick universe, whereas Doctor Who, you know, it's an established brand. It's getting this new big Disney Plus budget push, you know, so I think that's going to be big for the show, where you've had a show that's famous for, like, you know, duct taping plungers onto garbage cans and calling them Daleks and things like that. So it's going to be fun to see what the show does with a little bit of a bigger budget, because they've had some big budget years, some small budget years, so I'm curious to see, like, under Disney's wing, what the show looks like. So that's what I'm curious about, is, like, how does this established show change under the big wing of, like, a major streaming platform? Whereas The Continental, you know, like, it could be a cool action show, it could be, like, a Cheers kind of drama, or it could be a show that nobody watches, nobody talks about, and the first episode is, like, kind of okay, and then the rest of it is just forgettable, and nobody ever mentions it again for the rest of the year. And I feel like Doctor Who, for better or for worse, is going to be a big centerpiece of the conversation next year, especially when it comes to defining Disney Plus as a platform.
Yeah, I get all your things. And I think if we're going to argue back and forth, it comes down to you may not care about the Continental. And you don't seem that intrigued by it. However, with Doctor Who coming on Disney Plus, it seems like something I'll at least check out the first episode for. So I feel like as far as our own projects, it feels like you're more excited for Doctor Who than I am for the Continental. And I'm also more intrigued by Doctor Who than for the Continental. So I feel like ultimately we're just going to land on Doctor Who. So with that, I will say the handy for most anticipated of 2023 goes to the Continental. No, I'm kidding. It goes to Doctor Who on Disney Plus. So Doctor Who.
Look, make my Peacock payment worth it. You know, I'd be here for it.
Yeah, I got it for free for having Xfinity. So I'm not losing no money. So I believe this could be Disney Plus's first handy. I might be wrong. Yeah, this is the first handy for Disney Plus goes to a project they haven't even released yet. Congrats to them. And now we have one category left. And I saved this for last because I thought it'd be a little bit more climactic. But I feel like we've already kind of given the award out just because we've talked about it. And that's the award for best streamer. Now, I'm just going to say it because I already kind of said it. My pick is for HBO Max. I feel like overall they've had more. If I were to rank the best shows and best movies to come out this year, like you've loved White Lotus. I love Peacemaker. Like, I think if we were to rank the top five shows, they would have probably two or three of the top five shows. And I immediately blanked on the HBO Max original movies this year. But I think even when it comes to backlog content, they win at that. Just like if you were going to have one streamer in 2023, it's HBO Max. Like that's the one you're going to want.
Yeah, when I looked at this award, that was my logic too. Like, if you're going to pay for one platform, which is it going to be? Netflix has a lot of good stuff. They drop a lot of new stuff, you know. There's always a new movie, new show on Netflix. So I kind of thought about Netflix for a second because they've also had a bit of a comeback year, you know, where I was ready to cancel my Netflix this time last year, but now I'm ready to keep it going. But, yeah, we talked about it last week a bit where HBO is one of those things where if you're plugged into the internet and you follow the news, you're seeing all of this bad press and you feel like HBO Max is any day away from cancellation. But if you're a person at home paying for a platform and you want to get the best movies, the best shows you can get for the best money, there's nothing better than HBO Max right now. And the backlog is incredible. We talked about earlier a bit how part of what you pay for on your platform is getting the new movies of this year as soon as you possibly can get them, you know. And HBO Max has done a great job for the last few years of getting the Warner Brothers movies out there as soon as they possibly can get them. Sometimes, you know, too soon if it was early on in the 2020s. But yeah, they're doing a great job supporting that platform. And I'm happy to give it to them this year because I don't necessarily know what they're going to be looking like next year. You know, if this thing kind of collapses and they delete all of the stuff like they're saying they're going to do and they merge the platforms together with all the other platforms, it could be a time where the HBO Max they're praising right now doesn't exist a year from now. So I'm happy to give them the award this year because I think they're doing a great job, and I hope that whoever ends up being the owner of the platform can keep things going slightly in this direction.
Yeah, I fully agree. I mean, if you listen to the news, you may think they're the worst one, but if you're just watching the content, to me, they're far and away the best. And so with that, the handy for the best streamer goes to HBO Max. It makes sense. They've completely crushed all of the other ones in wins. Let me pull that document up again really quick. Yeah, HBO Max, this is their seventh handy that they got this year. Prime has two, Netflix has two, Apple TV Plus has two, and Disney Plus only one. Hulu technically got one. Hulu got one, and that is for the worst streamer. So, far and away the best streamer. If you're going to have one streaming platform, it's HBO Max.
Yeah, they have a great, great selection. You know, I always go HBO Max first when I'm looking for something to watch.
Yep. All right. I think that wraps up our show this week. I honestly don't know if we're going to have a show next week. I'm going to be out of town, but I believe our next show, we might talk about a little bit of our January things we kind of have been watching the last few weeks since our last actual show. And also maybe talk a little bit about our most anticipated Foley of the year. We talked a little bit with this award with Doctor Who and the Continental, but we may expand on that a little bit more in our next show, because normally at the beginning of a month we do our most anticipated of the month, but since it's January and I don't expect for some reason that there's going to be a lot of big drops in January to do a full
month. At least not the first couple of weeks, you know. Yeah. And I would love to do a conversation, yeah, because we went through that best of 2023, or like most anticipated 2023. It was hard to narrow it down to just one, because there's a lot of potentially great stuff. And I would love to even go like platform by platform and be like, what's worth paying for on these platforms this year? So yeah, it'll be a good year. I'm excited to see what we talk about next year. A lot of great stuff coming up, so I can't wait to have the conversation. And I'm glad we're covering so much of these streaming platforms. Now it'll be a hard year next year, because we have so much to chew on, but I can't wait for it, Joe. It'll be a good conversation. It'll be a fun year, and I hope you catch up on stuff that you haven't watched, and catch up on stuff that I haven't watched over the next couple of weeks, and have a great 2023.
All right, yeah. I'm excited to talk about it. If you got anything you want to say, talk to the hand and tweet at Movie Changeup. If you don't like the name of our award, you think it's a little grotesque, I don't know. Be a little bit more mature and accept that people think other things are funny that you maybe don't. So.
Yeah, go to Handy, all right? Calm down.
Yeah, we gave out a lot of handies today, Tristan. A lot of handies.
Yeah, I got to go get some water, you know.
All right. And without further ado, goodbye.